Jambu Mali with great force. Jambu Mali, however, broke her to pieces with 10 arrows. Hanuman then uprooted a large tree and began to whirl it around. Jambu Mali easily broke the tree into pieces with 4 arrows, even before it left Hanuman's hands. The Rakshasa then pierced Hanuman's arms with 5 arrows and his chest with 10 more arrows and a dart. Hanuman remained undaunted. The great, now listen to this, this is quite something. The great monkey warrior then picked up a huge iron bar and twirled it forcefully, smashing it against Jambu Mali's chest. The iron bar hit the Rakshasa so violently that his head, legs, chariot, and donkeys vibrated so much they could no longer be distinguished from one another. They got really a bit of a shaker. Hearing of Jambu Mali's death, Ravana became further enraged and commanded the 7 sons of his chief minister to attack Hanuman with a large army. Thereafter, when the Rakshasas approached the Ashok Grove upon their chariots, they saw Hanuman stationed at the garden's arched gate. The Rakshasas immediately began showering their arrows so heavily that Hanuman was momentarily obscured from view. Hanuman, however, leapt into the sky, thus avoiding their onslaught. Then he charged, roaring loudly. Within moments, Hanuman struck down innumerable Rakshasas with his hands and feet, while he tore others to pieces with his nails. Others were crushed by the impact of Hanuman's chest and thighs, while still others simply fell to the ground, stunned with fear from hearing Hanuman's roar. What was he roaring?
Jai Shiva!
You ladies surely understand that? You got it. When all 7 of the chief minister's sons were slain, the remaining warriors panicked and fled. Hanuman returned to the archway, awaiting further combat. Ravana then sent 5 of his leading generals, along with a large army, saying, "I want you to capture this Hanuman, for he could not be a mere monkey. He must be a super powerful being." Thereafter, the Rakshasa army assailed Hanuman from all sides. The general named Durdara, what does Durdara mean? Carrying someone a long way, is it? Something like that. The general named Durdara released 5 arrows that pierced Hanuman in the forehead. This merely infuriated Hanuman, who swelled immensely in size. Then, leaping into the sky, he fell on top of Durdara's chariot like lightning striking a mountain, from the impact of Hanuman's gigantic body, the chariot was smashed to pieces, and Duryodhana and the horses were crushed to death. Hare Krishna. The people handle this. Devastating. Enraged at the destruction of their comrade, two other generals named Virupaksha and Yupaksha suddenly sprang into the air and struck Hanuman's chest with their clubs. Undaunted, Hanuman swooped down to the ground, uprooted a tall tree, and struck the two generals dead. The two remaining generals, Prigas and Basakarna, then came before Hanuman and pierced him with a spear and dart, causing his body to become covered with blood. The enraged Hanuman then quickly tore off a mountain peak, complete with all its animals and trees, and pounded the two Rakshasas into mere pulp. Is that okay, children? Is that too much?
No.
With the five generals out of the way, Hanuman effortlessly destroyed the rest of the army. Hanuman killed the horses by swinging dead horses and crushed elephants with the dead bodies of other elephants. He struck dead the soldiers with the bodies of other slain warriors, and smashed chariots by wielding other broken chariots. After covering the ground with many mutilated dead bodies, Hanuman once again stationed himself at the archway. And what did he say?
Jai Shri
Upon hearing of this massacre, Ravana simply glanced at his son, Aksha, who was seated close by. Desirous of battle, the prince, understanding his father's indication, eagerly leapt from his seat in the assembly. He then mounted his mystical chariot, which could travel through the air and was drawn by 8 horses. As he approached the Ashok Grove, Aksha began showering all his arrows on Hanuman. As he came to close quarters, a fierce duel ensued, which made the earth begin to quake, the sun become dim, and the wind cease to blow. When Aksha managed to pierce Hanuman's head with 3 arrows, Hanuman began to expand his body, while the Rakshasa warrior continued to shower arrows on him. The young Aksha was childishly proud of his strength, and he came fearlessly before Hanuman, like an elephant approaching a well covered by grass, which means his death. But he doesn't recognize it. He thinks it's okay. After being struck by Aksha's arrows, Hanuman assumed an awesome feature and sprang into the air. Aksha closely followed him, while constantly releasing his arrows. However, Hanuman successfully dodged them while moving through the sky. When an arrow suddenly pierced his chest, Hanuman mentally praised the skill of his enemy, thinking, although a young boy, this Rakshasa is fighting very heroically, and I really do not wish to kill him. However, as the battle progresses, his prowess only increases. If I do not kill him, I may become defeated. Therefore, it behooves me to kill him immediately. Just as a spreading fire should be extinguished at once. Increasing his speed, Hanuman killed all of Aksha's horses with a slap of his hand, causing the disabled chariot to fall to the ground, smashed to pieces because it was flying through the air. Aksha took up his bow and sword, jumped from the ruined chariot, and ascended into the sky like a rishi on his way to heaven. Agile Hanuman, however, caught Aksha by the legs, then spinning him around thousands of times, he smashed the son of Ravana violently to the ground, with all his limbs broken and his chest crushed. Aksha gave up his life while vomiting blood. So you see, some people think they're Krishna consciousness. I remember one time in Cato Ridge many years ago, one family brought their mentally retarded son, who was perhaps in his late teens or maybe after him. They brought him to the temple. This boy was retarded, and the nature was that he was just sort of, he would just sit there, basically immobile in all respects. And they told us he will make a very good swami because he can just sit peacefully and meditate. So some people think that Krishna consciousness is for people who can't do anything else. I was just reading in another part of this book that one person, I forget who it was, but he was some sort of kshatriya. He was trying to fight someone else. And this was going on for a long time. Finally, he was defeated, couldn't do anything more. And he said, guess I had better renounce the world and just go and live in the forest, like I couldn't make it as a kshatriya, so I'll take up spiritual life. Well, it's not like that. Spiritual life is not just for people who are useless, materially useless. But spiritual life is very amazing thing. And within the context of spiritual life, everything happens. Everything is there. Just like Hanuman is a devotee, but he is fighting to kill the demons. He's a warrior devotee. Are any of you warriors? Do we have any warriors here? Any children warriors? Is Balada, are you suggesting Balada? Are you a warrior? He's hiding behind his father. Any of the girls, any female warriors? What about Nanda Priya? Yeah, we don't have so many warriors, but if you're a warrior, even if you're a warrior, you can serve Krishna. Yes, you can serve Krishna, or in this case, Lord Ram, in practically any way. Practically any way, actually. Whatever you can do that for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Except, of course, some sinful activity. like, we would not advise you to own a bottle store for Krishna. Or, you know, some of these other things around. Not really. You can't really do that for Krishna. So we should try to find something which we can do, which can be done for Krishna. Most things can be done for Krishna. It's a simple activity. Even here, the story goes on, and of course this is very abbreviated, but you may have heard us describe how there was a whole lot of people came one after the other, sent by Ravana, to try to catch Hanuman, ideally. Catch or kill. So there was one person who was sent, whose name I forget, but he was very talkative. You may have heard about this. So he came in front of Hanuman, and first of all, he didn't just attack him. First of all, he started blaspheming Ram, right face to face with Hanuman. Now that was not a very good idea. Not a very good idea at all. You know, there are injunctions. You may have seen a Nectar of Devotion. If you hear blasphemy, you should cut out the blasphemer's tongue. Or if you can't do that, you can just kill them. If you can't do that, you just kill yourself. If you can't do that, you should go away. Actually, first thing you should do is defeat the person. Yeah. So Hanuman, he heard this man blaspheming over him with a very, as I said, he was very talkative, what they call in the vernacular, a big mouth. So he was right in front of Hanuman, blaspheming and talking badly with his big, wide mouth open. And then Hanuman suddenly felt an overwhelming call of nature and just urinated in the man's mouth, which shocked him terribly. He was expecting maybe a fight or something, not urine in the mouth. In fact, he was so shocked, he didn't know what to do. And Hanuman just killed him. So later, when Hanuman returned to Lord Ram, and Lord Ram somehow had heard about this, and Lord Ram told Hanuman, you shouldn't have urinated in this mouth. He's a kshatriya. You're meant to fight with him. And Hanuman said, well, he might have been a kshatriya, but me, I'm a monkey. And we do things like this sometimes. Yes, a little unorthodox. Yes. So it looks like Ram was not so happy about Hanuman urinating in the person's mouth. But on the whole, in principle, we should understand that whatever you can do, you can do that for the Lord within reason, with the exception of just a small number of things, really, which are sinful, and therefore they're just, on principle, they're just not really acceptable as service to the Lord. Even, you know, there's a very interesting story of one of the Alvars. The Alvars, they were a number of saintly persons who appeared in Tamil Nadu. They're Tamil Vaishnav saints. They're great devotees. King Kulashekar was one of them. Some people count Ramanujacharya as one of them. Anyway, there was a whole series of them, and actually they were before Ramanuja, generally. So it's going back some thousands of years. So, those different devotees, including some of those Alvars, they undertook to build the temple at Sri Rangam. But it was a massive job, and they were very poor. They were just sadhus, saintly people. They had nothing, really. But they would try to engage the kings and wealthy kshatriyas and vaishyas in contributing. However, when one of these alvars was living, then the local king and all his associates and other wealthy people in the vicinity, they were all very degraded. So he would go, this devotee, this alvar, he would go and appeal to them, please give a donation. We want to build, continue building this Sri Rangam temple. It went on, you know, that construction of that temple went on for thousands of years. And it is not finished yet. They just opened. One part was just finished about 10 years ago. The main Gopuram, the main gate, was just finished a few years ago. Anyway, this devotee, this Alva, great devotee, he went and he appealed to the local wealthy people. But they just were not interested. They were not at all interested. And in fact, they were very rude to him. You know, when you're going out collecting donations or distributing books about Krishna, spiritual literature, when you go out and you're preaching like that, sometimes you meet people of that sort. Yes. And they may abuse you in some way. But the devotees carry on. Anyway, this particular devotee, this Alva, he carried on, despite being treated rudely and even threatened. So after a while, he realized, I will never get any donations from these people. I just won't get anything at all. And they are the people who have all the money here. So we need the money, but they're not going to give the money. So how, but we have to get the money. So how will we get the money? You know what he suggested? What he thought? We will have to steal it from them. So he contacts some of the local dacoits, some of the local gundas. You know, I saw it was either somewhere around here or in India a year or two ago. I think it may have been in India. You know, they have these advertisements, these posters advertising the films. So there's one film called Gunda. And there's this man, he looked just like your typical gunda. Yeah. A really grotesque, kind of Rambo-type character. But everyone thought he was great. Yes. This is Kali Yuga. People admire the gundas. Just like in Russia, when communism collapsed, then they went around asking the children in the schools, now you can do what you like, what would you like to be when you grow up? So there was a large percentage of the young girls, I mean like teenage girls, they said quite openly, we want to be prostitutes. There's good money in it. So in this age of Kali, degraded people become glorified, and saintly people, they're not taken seriously, or even they, like this Alva was, abused like this, or at very best, not taken seriously. So he contacted the local gundas, and he organized this whole big gang. He had some mystical powers, so he protected them, and they split the booty 50-50. And he was protecting them with his mystic powers. He got so much money He built a large part of that Sri Rangam temple. Then later, when he finished, he told the Gundas, "All right, let us go for a little boat ride. It's on an island between two rivers, in the middle of one river, sorry, Kaveri River." So he said, "Let us go for a boat ride to celebrate how successful we've been." So they went for a boat ride out in the middle of the Kaveri. By his mystical powers, he caused the boat to sink. And he just walked across the water to the other side, and all the Gundas drowned. So, even in that very extreme situation, he engaged those Gundas in being Gundas in the service of the Supreme Lord. Of course, we do not recommend that. So if you are a Gunda, I don't think any of you are, but don't be a Gunda, a Krishna. Yes, you just try to be a nice devotee. But the fact is that one can do anything for Krishna, practically, as we've seen. It's just a matter of trying one's best to do whatever one can do, but to do it very enthusiastically for the pleasure of Krishna. This is actually the secret to success in spiritual life. Like Hanuman, he was able to fight. He was able to fight. So he fought for Lord Ram in many very amazing ways. He fought for the Lord and pleased the Lord. So, of course, there's one verse in Srimad Bhagavatam. Krishna Varanam Tushar Krishnam Sangha Pangastra Parshadam Yad Yai Sankirtana Prayer Yad Janti Yesu Medhasa. That in this Kali Yuga, people who have good intelligence, they will worship Krishna. They will worship the incarnation of Krishna, who comes and who is always chanting the holy names of Krishna. And they will worship him through performing the Sankirtan Yajna. That particular form of the Lord, the verse says, he comes accompanied by his servants, his confidential associates, and his weapons. So what are the weapons there? This is talking, of course, about Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya is the most recent incarnation of Krishna. He has come to establish the Sankirtan Yajna, this movement of the spreading of the Hare Krishna, chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. But he's come, it says, with his weapons. What are those weapons? Lord Chaitanya never waged any violent campaign against the demoniac people or anyone. So what are his weapons? That is described. That's a very busy sounding ringtone. His weapons, there are two main weapons. One is his beauty, which overpowers the minds of the conditioned souls. And the other weapons, they are his associates who use their words. It's the words are actually the weapons. And with those words, those spiritual words, then the demoniac mentality of those demoniac people, that demoniac mentality becomes killed. And then the demon is no longer there, but now there's a devotee. Yes. In fact, it's said sometimes, you may have heard, how in the Satya Yuga, the demons and devotees were living on different planets. In Treta Yuga, they are living in the same planets, but in different towns. In Dwapara Yuga, in the same towns, but in different houses, or different families, like that. But in Kali Yuga, sometimes it is said that the demon and the devotee, sometimes, they're living in the same body. Sometimes it's expressed like that. How that person, even though